Welcome to the Do Deals Get Rich podcast. I'm Raleigh Williams, former merger and acquisition attorney, sold my last business for $26 million, and now I own DealMaven.io. I'm here to demystify deals so you can get rich as quickly as possible and move on with your life. Okay, we got Hunter, the CEO of Roofing.com. Hunter, how you doing, bro?
Doing good, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. So your story is you were a firefighter for four years and in the Marines. Thank you for your service. By the way, this is my first time seeing that. And ultimately transitioned out to run a construction, to start a construction company that you sold. Now in the process of buying back and also running roofing.com.
Right. Yeah. So
tell me...
I didn't leave the fire department to start a construction company. It's kind of a running joke in the roofing industry. It's like nobody grows up and says, hell yeah, I want to be a roofer. It just kind of finds you. And then, you know, you stick with it because it's pretty good money. I didn't leave the fire department to start a construction company.
I didn't mean to trigger you, bro. I didn't know there was a landmine there. I had no idea.
No, it's just funny. Because people think that all the time that I left and started the roofing company right away. So basically I got out of high school, was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, how I was going to make a name for myself. My parents were kind of into the drug scene. So my family got split up when I was young. And so I wanted to go the Marines route, figured out it was a way out for me. So I did that 6 years, did the Marine Corps 6 years, did the fire department and EMT 5 years full time, but I always kind of had a side hustle while I was at the fire department. If you know much about the schedule, it's 24 hours on, 48 hours off. So I always had those 48 hours that I could go out and hustle. I was always buying and selling stuff, boats, cars, trailers, ATVs, anything you can imagine, stupid stuff. So I was always hustling, had the side businesses. And in 2015, finally decided to step away from the fire department. And when I stepped away, my focus was at that time marketing. So I started trying to learn the game, SEO, pay-per-click, Facebook ads, all that good stuff, and started working with a bunch of different clients in different industries, coffee shops, fitness clients, roofers, all over the board. And I just saw pretty quickly that roofing was a good industry. You know, like I had to get, if someone was paying me $2,500 a month to run marketing for them, well, the coffee shop had to sell 2,500 cups of coffee to justify it versus a roofer's got to sell one roof. So I was like, all right, I think I'm going to focus on the roofing space. So I actually rebranded my company, changed the focus. We just went all in on roofing. Pretty soon after that, I got this bright idea that I was going to start my own roofing company just as kind of like a case study. And after doing that for about a year and a half, where I was kind of, you know, partially involved, I was hiring a team and like we were growing, but I wasn't real serious about it. This was May of 2017, I started Cornerstone. In January of 19 is when I said, hey, I'm going to take this serious. I'm going to start growing it. I started building out training, systems and processes for my team, really hiring a big sales team. And then we really just started to grow from there. And I decided that I wasn't going to focus on the consulting or the marketing anymore.
And then what was the process of exiting to SIRC? Was that just like you were growing and they just kind of approached you to your doorstep, or you kind of felt the hamster wheel and you wanted to figure out an off ramp, or how did that look?
Yeah, I guess it was kind of one of those like law of attraction things. You know, for me in 2020, I started looking into what does it look like to exit. Did not feel like I was ready to exit yet. Didn't think I could get the value that I wanted out of Cornerstone. But I wanted to start learning about it. How do I raise the multiple of this roofing company and make it more valuable than other roofing companies? Because really, it's you usually don't get a very strong multiple on a roofing company. Like it's like 3 to 7x, 7 if you're lucky. So was looking into these things. I joined a couple masterminds, one with Nick Long, one with a guy named Matt Lackey. Started learning the game pretty soon after I joined one of those masterminds, Nick's mastermind. He knew the CEO at SRC, and they were looking to acquire a company on the East Coast so they could expand over here because they were mostly in California, Arizona, over there. So I fly out there, go meet them, shake their hand, show them what we have. And then we moved pretty quick to close on the deal. So it was an experience. I got to learn a lot throughout the process, the good, bad, and the ugly. So it was good.
Tell me about the ugly. That's the part. Nobody cares about the good. We all want to hear about the ugly.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's with being as cordial as I can be, as a seller that's selling 100% of your company, and getting cash, getting shares, whatever, like the team that you're letting go of, like you obviously most of the time as a founder, like you love that team. You care about that team a lot. You want to take care of that team. So there was definitely some struggles for me, like mentally that year after I sold Cornerstone, of just kind of feeling like, in a way I had just abandoned my people, you know, like it almost felt like I chose money over them. Now we were able to do some pretty cool stuff and give shares to the employees, the team, and take care of the people who helped me grow the company. So that was great. But I would just say, like, really do your due diligence on the buyer. And then even more so if you're going to take money from an investor, don't just run to the first guy that flashes some cash your way to invest in your company. I've heard so many horror stories of founders who take money, and then the person that gives that money is not in alignment with their morals, their values, their character. So don't just run to the money.
Yeah. So was that your experience? Did you have somebody that brought capital to the table pre-exit that ended up being a problem?
No. I was the sole owner of Cornerstone when I sold it. Yeah.
And so, and did you vet other, did you kind of go through a buyer courting process? Sounds like it was kind of just like one and done, just like, oh, a couple of meetings. Yeah. Like, it's not like,
yeah, because I've been honest. Like, when Nick called me and said, hey, I've got someone that's interested in buying Cornerstone, I was like, yeah, I'm not interested. It's not worth what I want it to be worth for me to exit. And he said, man, you know, I think it'd be worth you flying out there, meeting the guy and getting the experience, if nothing else. I said, yeah, that's fair. I agree. I'll do that. So I did. I flew out. We did a big trip, me and my wife, from like Boise to Salt Lake to Vegas, and drove all the way out to San Diego where they were, sat down, met with them. And then within 24 hours, I mean, they had me an offer, and it was just, you know, irresistible offer, something that you usually just wouldn't get in the roofing space, kind of too good to be true. So I jumped all over it.
That's awesome. And it was a cash deal. You didn't have to stick around in the transaction. You didn't have to run things. You didn't have to do an earnout.
It was cash and shares, and I stayed on for like 6 months to help, but I already had another CEO in place. So before I even sold the company, before I met those people, I already had another CEO in place that I had been working with for a year to take over. So when they purchased us, really my focus shifted from it, nothing to do with Cornerstone, to trying to bring on more acquisitions for that company, because they were trying to acquire more companies, and I had the network in the space.
Got it. And so is that roofing.com?
Yeah. So that was actually pre-roofing.com, before I had roofing.com, but I had RoofCon, the conference, and I had Revolt, the mastermind where we do all the retreats. So they kind of knew that played into the valuation for sure, knowing that I had a network and could go out and acquire companies. I mean, within the first 30 days, man, I probably had 12 companies, you know, ready to send us P&Ls and start doing due diligence on them. And we closed on one within 3 months of them acquiring me. I brought on one of the first companies. And then, like I said, they just kind of changed their business model, pivoted. They want to focus more on EV. And just shifted. So
EV is electronic voltage.
What is it? Electric vehicles.
Yeah. Oh, even though they're a construction company, they're wanting to do electric vehicles.
Well, so they do solar roofing and EV, and they really want to focus more on solar and EV than roofing.
What does EV? What does a construction company do in EV? What does that look like?
Yeah, installing like the charging stations.
Oh, got it. So electric voltage makes sense. Yeah. They're not getting in the car manufacturing. Like, no, right. So what was it? I think it's always interesting. I mean, the transaction can, like, the transaction is always interesting and people want to know about it. But I think, where were you at? Where were you at as a founder of Cornerstone? Was it like, I feel like I'm hitting a wall that I don't know how to get past, or like, this offer just came from the sky and it's too good to refuse, or I feel like the wheels are going to fall off this thing and I want to take chips off the table. I want to move on to something else. What was the more like you individually reasoning outside of just cash and being done?
Yeah. I wish it was something like more passionate and fiery, but the answer is just, it was too good to be true. Like these people came in, said, "Hey, we want what you got. We want your network. We want you to help us grow this thing. Here's an offer." And it was, again, just too good to be true. So I jumped on it.
And if I was like, yo, I want to start acquiring roofing companies, what are like the two or three things amongst the 12 that you looked at P&Ls versus the one that you purchased, what are the two or three drivers in roofing that like you gotta have right if you're gonna go in and buy one from being on the inside?
Well, for one, I would tell anyone listening, do not go buy a roofing company. Especially don't try to roll up. It's not the best industry. It's tough, man. You know, the margins get cut. There's a lot of insurance work out there. And so the insurance companies don't want to pay as much. Material goes up. They don't adjust their pricing for months. So your margin gets cut. It's a tough game. But I think the ones that are more valuable are the people that have training processes in place where it's automated. The recruiting funnels are on point. They have a big retail presence and not just insurance. They're not dependent on insurance work. They can do retail as well. Commercial, they're playing in the solar arena. They're already looking at that, because if you're a roofer and you're not looking at solar, you're going to get passed up real quick in the next decade. So I think it's super important that all roofers start integrating solar. I'd say those are the few main pieces.
Do you think most of the roofing businesses that you see, seems like the major constraint is labor, right? Getting the subs there to like actually get the work done. And like, is it just in the nature of roofing that like you can kind of be a one-man shop and make a couple hundred grand a year and you don't have to put that next level of investment, that's kind of like the first like box that people run into of like, I'm just going to make a couple hundred grand, call it good.
Yeah. And I would say that's, you know, the barrier to entry is super low because of that you can just go out and get some subs, create an account with the local supplier and have a credit line and start selling jobs and, you know, putting the money in your pocket. That's great, you know, in terms of supporting capitalism, but also that's if you just want to be an owner operator the rest of your life. And if you fall off a roof and break your back, like, what are you going to do then? So I've just always been about building a team and building something with enterprise value and being willing to give up some of the money to see other people flourish. For me, like in building Cornerstone, building roofing.com, RoofCon, Revolt, all the things we've done, it's always been delayed gratification. Like, I'm not trying to just pocket as much money as I can every year. I'm trying to reinvest into the business and know that payoff's coming someday.
Yeah. And what was the business doing, kind of EBITDA profitability? Like, how big was the business when you exited?
Yeah, so I think we did right around 15 million in sales the year before I sold, and we sold in February. So it was like right after that. Mm-hmm. And we were probably 10 to 15% earnings.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then tell me from exit to roofing.com and like what, now that you've had an exit. It's always interesting because every exit that you have, you kind of start at the base of the mountain again, and you kind of get to pick which mountain you want to climb. And you've kind of like seen different peaks and you get to decide a different way to do things. And so having seen the past exit, what's the new mountain and the new like thing that you see given your past experience in the industry?
Yeah. So it's kind of been crazy for me because although it's a different mountain, it's the same mountain range for sure because it's in the roofing space. And if anything, the exit of the company and the amount the exit was kind of propelled me forward, I guess, in the industry. We already had the event. We already had the mastermind and all those things were great. But there's just not too many people in the roofing space who are focused on exiting. Like, you don't hear those stories very often at all. Most guys are running the business until the day they die and maybe leaving it to their kids, or maybe there's just dissolving the business. So for me, it certainly helped. We went out, vaultroofing.com, have been turning that into a franchise. So franchises across the United States is roofing companies. So roofing.com of Atlanta, roofing.com of Orlando, roofing.com of Salt Lake City. So we're really excited about that. We have the Mastermind Revolt, where we bring in business owners from across the United States. We run these retreats. And so we have a lot of those guys who are going to be flopping their model to the roofing.com franchise model. And it should allow us to scale pretty fast and really be like that first national brand that can cover the entire United States. Because there's a lot of companies that are like, oh, yeah, we're licensed in every state, we can do work, but they don't have an actual location. So we want to be that first roofing brand to have a location in every single state, every single major metropolitan area, and be able to service homeowners.
How much did roofing.com cost?
What's up, everyone? I hope you're enjoying this episode. We are here trying to give you as much value as possible for free. As you know, we don't run ads on this podcast. We never will. If you're finding this episode valuable, if you could give us a 5-star rating and share this with a friend you're ready to do deals with, we are going to be one of the top 20 podcasts in the business category, and we need your help to do it. It means the world to me. Now let's get back to our regularly scheduled broadcast.
$500,000.
$500,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's expensive. What, like... So I want to kind of click in onto like the franchising thing, because so from a structure standpoint, so I guess if I want to do a franchise, I need to get my own, me as a franchisee, I get my own license within the state that I'm operating. That's not something that I can outsource to you. So it's going to be an owner operated franchise, I guess is the idea.
Yeah.
Not so much like I'm going to buy 12 roofing.com locations and have it be run by like all the, your kind of independent owner operator franchisees is the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We want owner operated.
Awesome.
Yeah. So they're basically buying the model, the training, the support of our team, our experience. They're buying leverage purchasing power. They're buying, you know, a better rebate program. You know, when we look at like the royalty of what we charge, which is 7% of gross revenue, they can make most of that back just in purchasing power. I shouldn't say most of it. They can make like half of that back in purchasing power, 3.5-4 points, just from the leverage we have in buying material, the amount of rebates we get back, us being able to buy apparel that all has roofing.com at a much discounted rate, us being able to get truck wraps done because everyone's got the same exact truck wraps. There's a lot of leverage in that. And then we also help with some of the marketing. We help with some of the hiring. So really try to set them up to have success and not be that solopreneur that comes into a business and has to figure out every single sector, sales, ops, marketing, finance. Like, we don't want them to be stressing to death. That's our job as a franchisor, is to provide them that support and really set them up for success.
Yeah. What, I did all of the legal work to do the franchise thing and the trampoline park. And I talked to probably 3 or 4 franchisors that were in the trampoline park business or in other franchise businesses. And they're like, it seemed to me from talking to them, you know, at least the franchise model that they were in, which is an expensive, you know, it's like building out a trampoline park's $2 or $3 million.
Yeah.
Which you would potentially think attracts higher quality franchisees because they have to have the capital to support a franchise at that level. Everyone likes franchising from an exit multiple standpoint and the recurring revenue and the contractual revenue thing but it always seemed from an operational standpoint, and a sales and support, like supporting the actual franchisees that like they hated it and regretted doing it. and you really don't make that much money on the first, you know, you like, you go through this dead zone of like your first, whatever, 30 or 40 units of it are like not profitable and you got to be supporting these people. First of all, is that true? Because the interesting thing is, right, you exit and you get to pick the mountain that you climb up again, right?
Yeah.
The mastermind model, the event model, those are all very like capital light, like cash generative. And you have a problem, trying to build enterprise value there somewhat, but like, and franchising is the opposite, like relative, like systems capital intensive. So the question is, that's all the buildup to the question, which is having your pick of the, having your pick of models, why franchising, and is what I just said true from your research of other franchisor? Give me like the, like why franchising is like the model, because roofing.com is an amazing asset, right? All those things. And like, why leverage it through franchising?
Yeah, so we looked at several different models, one of those being the mastermind that we currently run. We're charging, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a year to be a part of our mastermind, but we don't experience any upside. And we've taken guys from $5 million a year to $25, $30 million a year. We've taken guys that didn't have a business when they came to our retreat, they were just interested in starting, to doing $1.5 million in 90 days. And that, you know, that's great. And I'm super happy we've done that. But what does it look like to experience the upside on that, you know? So for us, we looked at that. We looked at having roofing.com really just as a lead generation platform for roofers and having different roofers listed on there. And we just fell on the franchise piece, man, because we have such a big presence in the space already. You know, if you go look up roofcon.com, you'll see like it's a pretty legitimate conference. We expect 5,000 attendees this year, 250 vendors. We'll have Tim Tebow speaking, John Maxwell, a bunch of good people coming out. And we feel like we can convert a good bit of roofers that have privately owned businesses and say, hey, look, for a couple of points, like, yes, it's 7%, but really net, it's probably only a couple points. Are you willing to give up a couple of points to, one, get the credibility of our brand as we grow across the United States? And roofing.com is great, but it doesn't have, you know, a huge brand presence yet. But when we have 200, 300, 400, 500 locations, yeah, then it's a game changer. When we're on Super Bowl commercials, it's a game changer. And so for them to be able to borrow that credibility instantly versus trying to grind it out in their market is a huge difference. And then us just being able to provide the support, all the hiring help that we do. I mean, we've done this with the Revolt members. We've done this stuff in our own businesses. It's a proven process. It's not like it just worked once and we don't know if it'll work again. And so when we can show people that, I feel like it's been a pretty easy sell thus far.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that's, I think those are all better driving reasons to do it with the audience and with like the way to, generate sales. I think a lot of people get into, you know, they build one restaurant location and they think that they can start franchising it, and that franchising is kind of like the silver bullet to scale difficult, like capital intensive scaling models. But this, at least from the franchisors that I've talked to, and I've talked to a fair amount of them, is the support that you have to get. You know, franchisees can kind of be the pits, you know, from business partners to have. But I think we try to
do a pretty good job of setting the expectation of like, look, we're here to help you. We're going to push you along, but we're going to push you, not hold your hand. You know, you still got to put in the work, do the work. I'm not a guy that wants to sit around and be on calls all day long, text and answer. It's like, go in there, do the training. It's all set up for you. If you come to me and you ask me a question that I know is in the training and you didn't watch it, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I'm not wasting my time answering. I'll tell you real quick to go back and look at the information that we busted our ass putting together.
Yeah.
Focus on that. Don't be coming and asking me questions or my team and wasting their time.
How did you get in? I mean, obviously in the marketing world, like masterminds and conferences are kind of like, you know, it's in that wheelhouse. How did you get into the business of running a mastermind?
Yeah. I really think it was just the progression of like leaving the Marine Corps, leaving the fire department, being out here running a company. And then as I started to build the company and get teammates around me, I wanted more of that. I wanted that feeling of brotherhood and camaraderie again. So I started my first mastermind in like 2018. Started to grow it through 2019, did my first event in 2019, did my first retreat in 2019. And then it just kept going from there. We started doing a ton. I mean, last year we did, I don't know, 12 or 15 retreats.
That's awesome. What like, if I want to start a mastermind, that's like, if that's on my radar, what's the like What are the pieces?
Yeah, it's really funny you say that, man. So we actually license Revolt out, so our mastermind model, to different industries. So right now we have about 14 different people that we're working with, a barber, home builder, solar, CPA, working with them to build out their own mastermind model, but leveraging the name of Revolt, leveraging all of our content, leveraging our systems, and just helping them to grow. So we give them all the training so that when they go to retreat, they know exactly what to do. They don't have to think about it. They have the steps. And to the point where if they don't feel comfortable leading it yet, they can even just press play and it's me leading the training for them. We'll tell them exactly how to set up the deliverables of the mastermind for the year-long program, how to price it. We've got models built out to show what the profitability is based off of how much the retreats cost, the free retreats, the member retreats, how much it costs to run the training calls, how much it costs for, you know, swag and apparel and just all that goes into running the mastermind.
Which so that also probably sheds some light on you franchising, because that's like the kissing cousin. That whole process right there, right? That process is the kissing cousin to a franchise model.
Yeah.
Right.
And to the point where like we have to walk a real fine line to make sure that we're not legally a franchise.
Right, yeah.
Like it's super hard because like, you know, there's two pieces, there's three pieces kind of the franchise. And you know, the trademark, okay, they're using our brand. Do you charge them money? Yes, of course. And then the middle one, number two, is operations. Are you supporting them in operations? So for us, we have to say, here's what we have.
Yeah.
We can't support you. We can't assist you, but here's what we recommend. If you want to do it, great. If you want to do it another way, great. So, you know, for us, we say, hey, 20, 30 grand, depending on the industry. If you want to run it for 10 grand, you can run it for 10 grand.
Is that a model that you charge up front for, like just like a fee to have it, or it's like a franchise or like a licensing, like a percentage of sales deal?
Yeah. So we do 25 grand up front. And with that 25 grand, we set you up, we bring you into our office for one day, help you train some content or record some content to put out a training course. We'll come to your first retreat with you and help you close some deals. And then ongoing, it's 10% of sales or $5,000, whatever's greater per month.
Yeah. And what was the reason to not do that exact same model for roofing.com? Like why even, what's the point of taking on the operational, just, I guess the risk of brand damage on something that you're trying to really take nationwide?
Yeah. We definitely considered that. But I think just the multiple in franchising is multiple, pretty sexy. Yeah. I mean, we feel like there's for sure $1 billion potential. If we don't hit at least a couple hundred million, I think it'd be a complete failure. But I try not to think about that stuff or talk about that too much. You know, I want to focus on the team. I want to focus on the communities that we're serving, the people that we're serving. That's really what should come first. And we're pretty big on creating a common mission that our teams can buy into and really go all in on serving those people. And by that, I mean like kids, like we care a lot about serving underprivileged kids. So for me, you know, I'd love to hit that big number exit value at some point,
yeah.
But it's not the main goal.
Yeah. That's amazing. I think that's super. You've been super savvy on like the packaging of information and like whether it's franchising or licensing. I guess lastly, where's the best place for people to find you to learn more? And like, of your time in entrepreneurship, you're like one thing, you're like your main soundbite that's the most important to you.
Yeah. So for me, I talk a lot about leadership. I talk a lot about legacy, I talk a lot about leading with legacy in mind, making decisions today that aren't going to get you a result today or tomorrow or next month or next year, but results that are going to come 10 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when you're not even on this earth anymore, but it's affecting people, it's impacting people. And so I think that, you know, as entrepreneurs, specifically entrepreneurs, because I feel like that's who your audience is, we need to be focusing way more on impact than income. If we focus on impacting people and taking care of those around us, our team members, our community, our family, our friends, the income will absolutely come. And anyone that has achieved anything at a high level will tell you that.
Yeah. Where's the best place? Where's the best place for people to find you?
Yeah. Facebook. I'm on Facebook. Just Hunter Ballou. If you go to my rep card, rep card's a company I'm a partner in. It's an app, like a digital business card. You can build funnels on there. Yep. You can go to repcard.com/Hunter. And I have like a bunch of training resources and videos and stuff on there too, if anybody wants any of that stuff.
Hey dude, I appreciate the time. And franchising and licensing, the way to kill it. So go check them out, and we'll catch you on the next one.